Do you remember those cartoons which started "Love is dot dot dot"? The little two little fellas, or girl and boy. You know, love is not hogging the remote. Love is not asking how much her new dress cost. Love is a surprise gift for him. Hint. Love is when he tries his best to cook you a meal. Love is when cold feet are a cure for snoring. One of my favourites, love is being glad he watches football at home. And there's one that you says it's love is eating chocolate together. Now, that's often how the world portrays love, isn't it? It's kind of the Hollywood style of love. And it's not bad, but there's much more to it. And often we can think about how we're being loving, and we think we're being really loving when, you know, those who we love annoy us, you know, be it in my family or be it in the church family, and I bear with them. I'm being really loving. And we think that's kind of enough. That's all we need to do. But being a disciple of Jesus will mean actually to have a much higher view of what it is to love and who to love. As we saw a couple of weeks ago, Jesus is teaching his disciples, Luke 6, verse 20. And it's teaching in this Sermon on the Plain, not to be muddled with the Sermon on the Mount, a separate sermon, and he's teaching his disciples with this large crowd listening in, but it's his disciples who he has in focus. And he's teaching them what it will mean to be his, what it will mean to follow him. He's laying out the expectations of discipleship. And at the heart of what that will mean is to be like him, is to be like his Father. See that in our passage in 6 verse 35, we'll be the children of the Most High. See it in 6 verse 36, be merciful just as your Father is merciful. And so the verses before us this morning are not just kind of a good moral guide to living, you know, how to love well, although they are. They're also ultimately a description of how Jesus loves, how the Father loves, and how in turn we should love as those who are his disciples. And the first thing Jesus says is, love your enemies. Love your enemies. See, in verses 27, we're going to look at verses 27 to 31. And notice a command. It's not if you so desire to. No, love your enemy. And although such a command has some similarities with the Old Testament commands, it's unparalleled in its emphatic tone. The Old Testament law commanded that one should love one's neighbor as oneself. But in Judaism, one's neighbor was someone with similar religious thinking, not one who was opposed and hostile. In other words, what we're seeing here is the new wineskins of chapter 5. It's all change. It's not just bolting something extra on, it's all change. You're to love your enemy. And although other ancient thought and religion may have had such a command, it was much more attached to the virtue of such a notion. In other words, it was a good idea. It was a nice way to live if you can kind of thing. But Jesus is unique in making it kind of the cornerstone of his ethic, as it were. It's not an option. It's not just a nice idea to strive for. It's to be part of who you are as a disciple of his, reflecting him. And so the motivation throughout these verses is not, I just want to love better so life goes well. It is, this is who you are as a disciple. As one who Christ has died for. As one who Christ has saved. As one who is united to him. This is not an either or option. This is not a bolt on addition to your contract. This is who you are as a disciple of Jesus. Would it be those who love like Jesus loves? Love your enemies. And verse 27 gives us a clue to who those enemies might be. Jesus says, but to you who are listening, I say, that is, to you who I have just said, you will be blessed if you are poor, hungry, sad, rejected, particularly as a result of persecution because you are mine, love those who persecute you, who have made you poor, hungry, sad. Love those who reject you. Love those who make your life miserable, persecute you because you're Christ's. Now, of course, that does not mean if people hate us, dislike us, make our life miserable just because they don't like us with no regard to the fact that actually we're Jesus's, well, then it's okay, we can just carry on ignoring them and not be kind to them. No, love them as well. Love all who oppose you. Love all who hate you. And what does that look like? Well, Jesus then spells it out with four commands and four illustrations. And the way it works is he gives three commands and he gives four illustrations, and then he gives the final command in verse 31. And so the first command is this. He says, do good to those who hate you. Go out of your way to do them good. And there's a kind of a practical sense here. You're to do good. It implies you do something. It's not just a heart attitude. It's an active action. So if your enemy, the one who continually mocks you for being Jesus in your workplace, is standing next to you in the coffee queue and they're in need of a coffee, do them good, buy them a coffee. If they've just had their first baby, buy them a gift. Think of ways that you can help them, be kind to them, move towards them in love. In other words, don't just ignore them. Don't speak ill of them. Don't join others in speaking ill of them. Actively seek to do them good. I'm reading a book at the moment, or listening to a book, called Captive in Iran. It's about two young women who are imprisoned in one of the harshest prisons in Iran because they love Jesus and they tell others about him. We're talking 2009, they were put in prison, so recent. And they get to this prison and it is just squalor. It's just a horrid place. You know, you're given a blanket and the blanket just stinks of urine because the women are not allowed to use the toilets in the night. You know, the toilets are just a complete mess. And these women ask for cleaning equipment and they begin to clean the prison, the jail where they're at. They clean the toilets and the shower every day. And then they knock on the door to where the guards are and they say, can we clean your guard room as well? And they go and clean the guards, the very ones who hate them and persecute them. And they go and clean where they are, their room. Do good to those who hate you. And then Jesus says, verse 28, bless those who curse you. And blessing, as we saw the other week, is to show favor, it's to show kindness, it's to show love, it's to show goodness, it's to seek their well-being. And what is the greatest way that you can bless someone? Is you tell them the gospel. Is you tell them the good news of Jesus. You tell them what they need to hear to be saved, that they might avoid the judgment of God that is coming. And the truth is, my temptation is to think when faced with an enemy, especially one who is mocking me for my faith, is to think inwardly, you just wait. Wait till the last day. Then we'll see who's right. And it won't be you. And Jesus says, no. Mark, that's wrong. You bless those who curse you. You tell them the gospel. I mean, think of the Apostle Paul. I mean, he's abused and he's beaten and he's left for dead, often by the Jewish people. And he pursues them and tells them the gospel and bless them. Think of Elizabeth Elliot. You know the story of Elizabeth Elliot, her husband Jim Elliot, another gentleman called Nate Saint, and two others seek to fly to tell a tribe in a South American jungle about Jesus. When they land their plane to begin to live amongst them, this tribe kill all four of them. Elizabeth Elliot has just had a baby girl. Her husband's just been killed. 2 years later, this woman, with her two-year-old daughter, goes and lives with that same tribe and tells them the gospel. She blesses those who cursed her. She'd have every right, were she not, to never go back. Humanly, just to say, no, you cursed me in such an atrocious way. You murdered my husband. And yet she goes and blesses them. Bless those who curse you. See, we're to bless those who hate us, either because we're Jesus or just because actually we annoy them. We're to seek their well-being. We're to look for ways to tell them the gospel. So maybe at Christmas, maybe at Easter, you just buy them a little book, a little gospel tract that they can read. Or that you take them to a gospel service just around the corner, maybe from where you work at a church up in the city. Or you bring them to Saltworks Tot, or you take them to Christianity Explored, but you seek to bless them and tell them the gospel in some way. Now, of course, there'll be times, as Paul experienced, that even as you move to bless them and love them and seek to tell them the gospel, they will reject you further. They will reject the gifts. They will hate you more. And at that point, we read what Jesus says next. Verse 28, he says, pray for those who mistreat you, who abuse you. You carry on, you see, loving them, blessing them, doing them good by praying for them. You seek to bring them to the Father. And you're not just praying, Lord, please will Harry begin to like me. You pray, Lord, please will Harry begin to like Jesus. You bless them by praying for them. And having then set out this framework, Jesus then gives four illustrations before his final command. He kind of just begins to work it deeper what this will look like to love those who hate you. And he says the first illustration, verse 29, a very familiar one. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other. And in the culture at the time, the slap was intended as an insult. It normally involved the back of the hand. It often went with rejection from the synagogue. It was an abuse of power and authority. Now, when Jesus says, turn the other cheek, it's not so much an active pursuit. I think we hear that sometimes and think, you slap me on the right cheek and we go, come on then, hit me on the left, go on. And that's not what Jesus is saying. In the context of being persecuted, it means you continue to share the gospel. You continue to bless. You continue to love them, even at the risk of further persecution. Even at the risk of being slapped again. You don't give up, you see. You carry on loving. Now, for us at this time, it is unlikely that we'll literally be physically slapped. But we might get verbal slaps that hurt deeply. And to love those who do that is you keep seeking to minister to them, to share them the gospel, to love them, to bless them, to do them good. See, even with that risk of being verbally slapped again. It's easy, isn't it, for us? It's too easy for us just to give up on those who oppose us. A person in whoever it is in our workplace or at the school gate who just mocks us for being Christ. Or even that neighbour who just doesn't like us for whatever reason. And we think we'll just give up on them. I'll move on to someone else. Forget them. And Jesus says, no, you keep loving them. You move towards them, even at the risk of being verbally slapped, verbally abused. You don't just wash our hands of them. You offer the other cheek. Now, it's worth just saying that Jesus is not envisaging here where someone is being abused. A wife is being physically abused by her husband, or a husband by a wife, or a child by a parent. That Jesus is somehow calling them to stick in there, keep loving them, even at the risk of being beaten. And sadly, some have used this verse to justify such a position. But Jesus' teaching on marriage and parenting just would not allow that. And so it would be right for the person to move away, to keep safe. But you keep loving. You keep seeking where you can to do them good and bless them and pray for them. And of course, it may well be as well that there are times, even as we persist in seeking to share the gospel with risk, that actually it's just right for the sake of the gospel to move away or move on from that person so that we don't further harden their heart. But we're to still love. We're to still seek to do good and seek to bless and pray for them. And then Jesus says, illustration two, he says, like, give verse 29. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt either. Give him your shirt. Deny yourself. In other words, you love in spite of the cost. Shirts and coats are not cheap items. They were valuable items in many ways. It's not like people would have had a wardrobe full of them. And you took one and they went down to TK Maxx and bought a new one. This is a picture of being robbed, potentially for being Christ's. You're being made poor. And again, it's not, hey, you've taken my coat, so here, Kate, take my shirt as well in the same moment. It's, no, just keep loving them, keep telling them, love is costly. It's not just that you'll be physically abused or verbally abused. It will involve self-denial, actual material cost as well at times. So they've taken your coat. You keep going. You keep seeking to bless them and doing them good and telling the gospel. And if you do that, they may take your shirt as well, but that's okay. Loving enemies will be costly. It will involve your time and your energy. And it will feel at times like they are robbing you, literally. And Jesus says, you keep loving them. We think, oh, that will mean we've been treated like a doormat. Can't do that. Jesus says, no, it will feel like that at times. That is what it will mean to do good to those who hate you and bless those who curse you. You keep going even when it costs. And then the third illustration builds on this. He says, give to everyone who asks of you. Seek to meet the needs of whoever without prejudice. Doing good to those who hate you. If one who persecutes you falls on hard times and they ask you for help or for money, you give it to them. If your neighbour who's mocked you knocks on your door and he wants a cup of sugar, you give it to them. You love them. You don't seek revenge. You move towards them. Then he says, the fourth illustration, you don't demand back. If they take something of yours, don't go your way to get it back. You just give it. It's more important to love the people than be concerned with the material things, even when it comes to your enemy. So the mocker in your workplace takes your nice Parker pen and makes out it's his. I think you go and ask for it back, and if he refuses, you don't demand. You let it go. Because you love people, not things. And of course, there are caveats to all these things that I've said. But it's interesting, Jesus doesn't do that, does he? He just says you love. And then Jesus gives the final command that kind of summarizes all that he says. It's often called the golden rule. Verse 31. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Treat them as you would want to be treated. Not how they treated you. Not conditional on their behavior, not conditional on what they say or what they do, not conditional on how they live or their religious beliefs. No, you're to treat them, love them with the respect and sensitivity that one would wish from them. That's the benchmark. That's how you'll know if you're loving your enemies well. You'll be loving them how you would want to be loved. So a person who teases you relentlessly for following Jesus, ask yourself, how would you want to be loved? And you move towards them in love. And you do them good and you bless them and you pray for them. And then Jesus raises the bar even more. Have a look at verse 32 to 34. He says, love in a way that surpasses that of the world. As I mentioned briefly earlier, there are many cultures and religious groups who speak of loving enemies and upholding the golden rule of love others as you would want to be loved. You know, go on the humanist website, you'll see it there, the golden rule. You'll see it Buddhists, as others, for example. And yes, they'll hold to it, but not in such an emphatic manner, and it won't be as central, But they would still express this desire to love others as you'd want to be loved and to love enemies, because that would be a good thing. So then what makes Jesus' command so distinctive? Well, it's this: you love in a way that surpasses the word. And look how they love. Look what Jesus says next. Three examples of how the world loves. He says, verse 32, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. Even the wickedest, most evil people of all time, Hitler, loved his wife because she loved him. They love those who love them. It's not unusual to love those who love us. That's how the world loves. It loves those from whom it gets something back. And on one level, I want to say, look, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how God made us, to love and to be loved. But that's Jesus' point. What credit is that to you? You're just being how everyone else lives. Even the greatest sinners love to be loved. You're just experiencing God's common grace to all. There's nothing distinctive about that. And he says that it's the same way if you do good to those who are good to you. You know, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. That's how the world operates. You do good, generally people do good back to you. I look after my neighbor's house whilst they're away. They look after my house when I'm away. There's nothing distinctive about that. That's what everyone does. There's benefit for both. There's no cost in that. Jesus says, look, if you lend to those whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. Now, the idea here is not that you lend money and never get paid back. That's a gift. And Jesus doesn't say that. What I think Jesus is referring to here is this idea that if you lend money now, you do so with the hope that if you need a loan at some point, they will show you the same favor. In other words, it's the principle of you scratch their back, they scratch yours. That's how the world operates. And Jesus is teaching his disciples here, you're not to love as the world loves. The world loves for what the world can get. Primarily to be loved back. Even the Buddhist and the humanists, ultimately that's why they love. I love that way, so others will treat me that way, so that my life and my world is a better place for me to live in or for my children to live in. So actually, I might even love my enemy in order to win them. I might do them good so they might do me good. I might seek to bless them so they might bless me. Ultimately, though, it's all about me. But when Jesus commands the golden rule in verse 31, and as a summary, a command of all that he has said about loving enemies, is not with the expectation that you will be loved back. No, your love is to surpass that of the world. It's to be so radically different. You love expecting nothing back. Yes, the standard of your love in some ways is to be the same. You love as you wish to be loved. But we might even argue there that actually, as those who are Christ, our understanding of what it is to truly love someone is far greater than the world's understanding. And so even though we might use the same standard, it will be radically different. But that's not ultimately Jesus' point here. His point here is you love and love them as you love yourself, but not expecting love back. Not expecting anything back from them. You just love. You love those who are your enemies, who hate you, who persecute you, who've made you poor, who have rejected you and made you hungry. You love. In fact, you love like your father loved. That's the distinctive, isn't it? Have a look at 35 to 36. Jesus says, love like your father loves. See, 35 to 36 provide the motive. It provides the reason why we love this way, why we're to love in this manner. Verse 35, he says, love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to get anything back. It's kind of a neat little summary of all that Jesus has said in verses 27 to 34. And then look what he says. If you love this way, then your reward will be great. And the reward is not that you'll be saved or you'll gain eternal life, because Jesus is speaking to those who are his disciples, who are saved or will be saved in effect. No, the reward seems to be tied to the Father's favour and the Father's pleasure. See a similar thing in 1 Corinthians 4:5, where Paul speaks of a time when each will receive their praise from God. It's that idea. It's this picture of pleasure and affirmation and praise that comes from the Father. Because look how the reward is tied to what Jesus says next. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. And note that little phrase, children of the Most High. There is only one other who has been called a child of the Most High in Luke. Just flip back to chapter 1 and verse 32. Where the angel Gabriel is revealing to Mary that she will be with child. And Gabriel says of this child, he will be great. And he will be called the Son of the Most High. And Jesus says, if we love as Christ commands us to, we will be identified with him as children of God, as a child of the Most High, experiencing his praise and pleasure and favor. And Jesus says, that will be the case because, back to Luke 6, we'll be reflecting the Father's character. That's how he loves. And as we do that, we're seen, therefore, to be his children. See, he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. He loves those who are his enemies. See, then Jesus says, verse 36, be merciful just as your Father is merciful. To be merciful to someone is to not give what is deserved. My enemy does not deserve my love. My enemy does not deserve for me to do good to them, or bless them, or pray for them, or love them as I love myself. Now, as I love them, I'm showing mercy to them. I'm reflecting my Father, who is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked, and he's merciful. And of course, standing this side of the cross, you can't help but think of the cross at this point, can you? Where the Father's love is so clearly seen to the wicked and the ungrateful. And friends, we were the wicked, and we were the ungrateful. And Jesus on the cross loved his enemies. He died for them. That's what Paul says in Romans 5 and 6 to 8. He says, doesn't he, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. That's how the world loves. But then he goes on, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still sinners, while we were still wicked and evil and rebellious and rejected him. And so often we kind of think of ourselves, don't we? Oh, Mark, you're so lovable. Of course God's going to love you. Look at you, Mark. You're lovable. You're fun. You're kind. This is how I think of myself. patient. And God's surely going to love you. You're lovable. And the Bible says, no, Mark, you're not lovable. You hated Christ. You rejected Christ. You were his enemy. You were wicked. And still, Christ died for you. He loved you. And then you begin to work through from verse 27. And you see just how clearly this shows and reflects Christ. He did good for those who hated him. And not only at the cross as he bore our punishment for our rejection and rebellion of God, our Creator, but he did it throughout his ministry. He healed the sick and he fed the hungry, many of whom would reject him and hate him. And yet we find it hard to buy a coffee for the person who mocks us. He blessed those who cursed him, those who thought little of him as they abused him and threw insults at him as he was nailed to a cross. And still he blessed them. He came and spent time for 3 years, knowing that would be where it would end, and he revealed the gospel to them, to us. He prayed, didn't he, for those who mistreated him. As he's nailed upon the cross, the soldiers and the crowds, he looks upon and he says, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. But I find it hard to even pray for those who mistreat me with just a verbal word against me. When they slapped him, he turned the other cheek. He kept going to the cross. He didn't call upon his angels to release him or free him or harm those who were opposing him. He allowed them to beat him and whip him and spit on him. He kept going. When they took his coat again, he didn't stop. He allowed them to take his shirt. He allowed them to take it all, everything. And they cast lots for it. He totally denied himself at great cost. But I can't deny myself to love one person who dislikes me, giving up one little thing in case my rights are trampled. He gave to everyone who asked, any, all without prejudice, rich and poor and old and young, those from Europe and those from Asia, those from Africa. Any who would come to him and trust in him, he gives eternal life to them. I struggle to give a cup of sugar to the neighbour who's parked in my parking place on the road. He loved others perfectly. He loved him in a way the world had never seen or experienced. He loved those who did not love him. He showed mercy to those who did not deserve it. We deserved the wrath of God, and he bore it. He loved his enemies, and those who are his are called to do the same. To love as he loved, to be like him and reflect in his Father's character as he did. Jesus calls us to reflect him. As we're persecuted, how will you love? Like the world or like Christ? How will you love that person who just does not like you? Like the world or like Christ? Will you love your enemies? Will you do good to them and bless them and pray for them and love them as you would want to be loved, and doing it all for the praise of the Father, to be called children of the Son, children of the Most High? Take a moment right now to pray for your enemy. To pray for that person who you just find difficult. And to ask the Lord to help you love them. It might be because they're persecuting you and mocking you and teasing you. It might be that they just don't like you. But ask the Lord, how will you love them? How will you do good to them this week? How will you seek to bless them? How will you pray for them from this day on? How will you seek to share the gospel with them? How will you be like Christ to them this week?